Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Lee Cantor here with Katie Galley, another episode of High Velocity Radio. And Katie, this will be a fun one.
Yeah, it is.
Got a bunch of smart people.
We do.
Doing amazing things.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
We're going to kick it off with an old friend, Steve Latham, and he's with Banyan Hills Technologies. He was in the studio a while ago, last year, I think.
Yep.
Is that right?
Just over a year ago.
And anything change at Banyan Hills? How are you serving folks?
Yeah, it's really, we are growing like crazy. The IoT industry as a whole is really becoming more and more relevant.
And IoT, what's that mean?
So IoT being the Internet of Things.
Right. And what's an example of an Internet of Things?
So if you think about Tesla, smart car, or Nest thermostats.
My Alexa, is that an IoT?
Perfect.
Right.
Perfect.
So anything that uses the Internet but isn't like a computer?
Well,
it
could be a computer, it could be a control system, could be a smart device, mm-hmm. all reporting into a central management platform.
And then Banyan Hills, what do you do in that ecosystem?
Yep. So we are a services provider as well as a platform provider. So we've built a product called Canopy, mm-hmm. which is an IoT platform for the management, remote management and control of devices.
And that could be any device.
Any device.
So a company will have a device and say, hey, can you make this connect to the internet? And that's where Banyan Hills comes in?
Yep. They may have, so examples would be a kiosk solution that's a smart device that's being managed by an operator. Maybe they have 10,000 devices. We would connect all 10,000 into one central management platform and then provide them the business applications needed to run that network of machines.
So now, how'd you get into this?
So prior to Banyan, I worked for NCR and led a division at NCR where we took a kiosk network to market. It was an entertainment kiosk that rented movies, competed, and ultimately sold to Redbox.
Right.
So we had a large network across the U.S.
And that's an example where that's a kiosk and that's leveraging the internet in order to do its business.
Yeah, if you think about 10,000 unattended point-of-sale systems
right.
where a customer will go up, transact, facilitate a payment transaction.
It's the whole transaction occurs without a human being.
Correct. So you have to have central visibility into all 10,000. One, to make sure that the experience is up and running, that a customer can transact, that the store is running. And then you want to make sure that you understand as much about that transaction as possible so that the next transaction is even smarter.
Mm-hmm. And then, so right now, what type of companies are utilizing Canopy?
Yeah, so Canopy, one of the nice things about Canopy is it's agnostic to the solutions that it's managing. So we are out selling to multiple industries. One of our favorite recent accomplishments has been an operator that they're a hardware company that builds an access control system, and they sell into the self-storage industry. So if you think about walking into a self-storage facility, and as you pull in, you go to a gate,
right.
and you enter your PIN, and the gate opens.
Sure.
So that's an access control system. So they've sold to over 35,000 locations worldwide, and they had no over-the-top platform that gave them visibility into who is accessing the properties. Is the technology working? Are people staying overnight? Those were some of the things.
Those are issues in their world that I guess you wouldn't naturally think of that.
No. And yeah. then you extend beyond that. Access control is just one control system on a property like a self-storage facility. You've got other smart systems like lighting, music, elevators. So you can connect all of those into one platform to provide a central view for that operator.
So now, like, would you come in and then you would work with that access control company to create a more robust informational system for them?
Yeah, it's interesting. One of the things that we've noticed, particularly in the last year since we've met, is that we are helping our customers understand the value proposition of IoT for their respective industry. So part of our job is to drop in and really understand, once they use this technology, what is the value that we're going to help them realize? And then once we're there, then we can extend that value proposition and create, in some cases, entirely new revenue streams for them, certainly drive cost efficiencies, operational efficiencies into their business. And so it's been a lot of fun to watch sort of cross industries wake up to this concept of IoT.
So now in the case of that access card company, they might have at one time used like a swipe card, right? Where they just hit the swipe card, the door opens, they come in. They're not keeping track of how long they're there. They knew the door opened. That was the purpose of
right.
that. So now is it a PIN number now, or it's what, it doesn't matter, right? That's not really the important part, is it?
Right. There's a couple of things that you can do once you have it all connected into one platform. Is you can, one, you can change the entire experience. You know, one of the things, features of Canopy is we call it IoT campaigns. And that's basically creating the ability to have scenarios, to automation scenarios. So one would be that we've got a customer that arrives on a property. They either swipe a badge or key a PIN number in to open the gate. And then we can program or automate a triggered reaction to that, which might be something like change the music that's personalized for that consumer's preferences, or turn the lights on in that part of the facility only for that particular right. customer. And so you can really create these automated experiences, and your imagination can run wild at that point as to what you can do.
Because at one point it was kind of a dumb machine where it was just on, off, it was doing one thing.
Correct.
But now when you have the power of the internet attached to it, it can do lots of things.
Right. And I think you know, once it's connected to the internet, not only can you create these automated sequences, but you start to collect data that over time becomes very, very meaningful for them. You know, if you capture enough data over a long enough period of time, you can start to draw and derive conclusions mm-hmm. that might be very important for them. So in this particular industry, we're able to now look across 35,000 locations and see how people are accessing properties, how frequently they're accessing properties, to the point to where we can begin to predict when those customers are about to leave that business.
Oh, so they might be shopping for another.
Correct. I mean, something as simple as, you know, the easiest example to understand is that Steve Latham accesses the property, wants to move in, and then goes 8 months without accessing the property, and then suddenly in a 2 week span has accessed it 15 times. At that point, we now know something. We know that something's about to change.
Right.
And providing that data back to an operator is incredibly powerful. But then even rolling it up and providing to the industry as a whole and starting to draw some industry-wide conclusions about how customers transact is very powerful.
And then you could actually change the mechanism, right? Like I have the Ring doorbell thing. Mm-hmm. So now I can see the person. Where yep. before I could just, you know, it would be a noise. Now I can see the person. I can have a conversation with them anywhere. So it could be the same thing. You can see the person that's entering. You can have a conversation with them if you chose to increase the level of service.
Correct. Yeah, and I think I love how the consumer models are really, it's a good analogy for what we're trying to solve for on the commercial side, where as a consumer, you think about your home as a smart home. And today you can walk in and you can purchase these independent solutions.
Right.
You can purchase a Ring doorbell or a Nest doorbell or an Ecobee thermostat or a Nest thermostat or a Rachio smart irrigation system. And then when you want to maximize your usage of those solutions, you log into 10 to 15 different applications in order
right.
to control it.
Which now that's not optimal.
Not optimal. And if you're a business owner and you're trying to run a large enterprise, maybe you're a services company that provides services to customers like irrigation or pest control. You don't want your team of field technicians or customer service technicians to have to log into 15 different solutions.
Right.
You want to log into one
dashboard,
one pane of glass
that does everything.
Yeah.
And that's the advantage of Canopy?
Correct.
Now, something that happened with the Ring doorbell was one of the things, because it was a digital, now instead of the ding dong of the buzzer, I have a choice. I can put a dog barking. So then we do that. So now people at first, when they hit the buzzer, ding dong and the dog barks. So now I'm getting a security element, which wasn't even like, that was a surprise and delight thing for me as a customer. I'm sure the same thing, you know, once you open this Pandora's box, there's all kinds of ways to leverage this.
Yeah.
Right. And do you spend a lot of your time saying, okay, I know you came to us for this task.
Yeah.
And, but you know that this is a smart machine now. Now the yeah. sky's pretty much the limit here.
It's a great point, because typically conversations start with us about help us decrease our cost through the introduction of operational efficiencies.
Right.
Help us get visibility, help us reduce cost. then we'll transition into, is there a way that we could increase our revenue stream as a result of this technology? And then naturally, and the answer is always yes to those two, but then the natural extension of that, is there a way that we could increase the overall customer experience? Can we enhance it? So the idea of Steve Latham Access as a self-storage facility, and then we personalize the experience.
Well, it could be, welcome back, Steve.
Right.
Right. Welcome just like back. That. You're like, wow, that's a, how do they know? You know, like all of a sudden now you feel better.
Right. And so you start to personalize, helping the customer re-fall in love with the experience. And then I think the last of the four-legged stool there would be using the data to drive great analytics about how to further optimize each of those first three, but then also potentially to monetize the data on the back end once you have enough scale.
Now, the data element of this, like you said, initially they're talking to you not for data. They're talking to you to solve a problem that they think that you're going to be able to solve.
Right.
And then you're coming to them with this kind of tremendous amount of other value that you're providing. And the data side, are they equipped to kind of call through the data, or is this something that you have to kind of help them do?
Typically the answer is no. They're not used to being able to collect this much data. They're not even aware how rich the data can be to them.
Right.
So, and truthfully, it's not even that interesting until you have enough of it to make it interesting. And so generally we arrive at that conclusion later in an implementation, and then we start to show them the power of the data that they've collected. And then from there, the future of this scenario for them is once you have enough of that data, then you can really start to look at things like machine learning or leveraging artificial intelligence engines to help you scan, collate that data to draw meaningful conclusions for them.
Now, is this typically their first foray into machine learning and artificial intelligence, or are they doing this typically in other aspects of their business?
A lot of our customers that are new to us aren't even thinking about machine learning and artificial intelligence. Sounds so science fiction to them. Even
right,
the
like
term
if you're
IoT.
A storage company,
right?
I mean,
right.
Are you even thinking like you have a lot of data?
Right. So a lot of times we get people that will say those terms and they're excited about them, but they don't really understand what goes into making AI possible for them. And so they have an excitement coming into the conversation, and then we help educate them. Look, AI is certainly a possibility for you, but only after you start to soak in enough data over a long enough period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, then we can start to draw some really powerful conclusions for their business.
Now, how has the Atlanta technology ecosystem been for you guys?
It's been awesome. I mean, I feel very fortunate. So Banyan's 5 years old. We started in Atlanta. We have leveraged Atlanta to the T.
Did you start in one of the incubators or accelerators?
No, we started. So I left NCR, started the company from the ground up, but immediately reached into the university system for hiring, started to plug into the university system for opportunities to educate the team members coming out of college, but also to generate some good public, some PR for the company. And then started to plug into Chamber of Commerce activity, plugging into TAG, networking, building some relationships. And we're so fortunate in Atlanta to have the university system that we do, to have the support of TAG, for example, and then to have access to the transportation. For me, having to travel all over the world and being able to go to the Atlanta airport and to get to wherever I need to go has been critical for our success.
Now, what about recruiting? Are you recruiting primarily Atlanta talent, or are people coming from all over?
So the majority of our business is in Atlanta. We have a couple of exceptions to that where we've got some international customers where we've placed some people into those markets. But the core of our business, 90% of our business is in Atlanta. And we've had great success in recruiting a combination of experienced engineers from all the large companies here in town, but also pulling out of the university network.
Now, I know Atlanta has a variety of technology clusters like healthcare IT. Is there an IoT cluster?
There is an IoT cluster. And there's also, we focus primarily on fintech and IoT. Those would be the two clusters that we focus within.
So fintech, we're pretty established and have a global reputation.
Correct.
IoT similar or not so much?
Yeah, IoT is, I would say, is on the rise. I'd like to think that we're a big part of that. I think that we are, Banyan and the reputation of Canopy, we're getting a lot of attention for it, not only in North America, but also worldwide. And so I like to think of Banyan as being a catalyst to really make IoT happen and become the Silicon Valley of the Southeast.
Now, is Banyan and the NCR is kind of, I don't want to say they birthed you, but they contributed. Is it similar like how McKesson it was a driver for the healthcare IT?
NCR, I have to give, my experience at NCR resulted in Banyan. There's zero question. The leadership that I got, the training that I got at NCR, the experience that they gave me in my role as CTO of that line of business, without that, Banyan wouldn't exist. And that just speaks to the power of some of the corporate entities that we have inside of Atlanta. The network of relationships that I created both inside and outside of NCR as a result of my time there also is an indication of the success that we're having. So we didn't spin out of Banyan. We weren't funded by Banyan.
Right, but are there a lot of NCR folks getting into IoT?
Yeah. Yeah, but a company like NCR, the term Internet of Things is almost seems silly to a company like NCR, who you think about what they do for a living in building and selling ATMs, point of sale systems. Right. Those are very, very large networks of unattended devices that they've been doing for many decades.
So right. They were doing IoT. It before it was cool.
Right. So NCR, you could argue that NCR has been an IoT company for a right. long time. And so when I left NCR, they have just a wealth of knowledge and experience of what it takes to run a large network of devices at scale.
Right. I wasn't saying that they're spinning them off. I was just wondering if a lot of the talent, when they leave NCR, they're staying here in Atlanta and they're building their own thing. It's like McKesson. A lot of the people from McKesson have left and have created healthcare IT companies.
Yeah, I think that's true. If you look at Banyan, NCR is in our DNA. It's in our DNA. A lot of employees came from NCR. I think that it's a great training ground for people that have an interest in being an entrepreneur.
Now, for IoT, are there industries that are more likely candidates for IoT than others? Or do you think that every industry eventually is going to have some IoT connection?
I get asked that question a lot about focus and what markets do we specialize in. And it's my opinion that every industry has an opportunity to leverage IoT for the reasons that I talked about earlier. But there are some industries that are showing they're adopting this faster than others. I think self-service, kiosk, hospitality, those are industries where you can see their understanding and embracing of IoT is outpacing others. We've noticed recently the one that has me more excited is the industrial IoT sector. So leveraging IoT solutions to make a smart city or a smart facility, we're seeing a lot of interest and investment happen in those spaces, which is a great opportunity for us to participate. And then to help think about a smart city and how many different lives and solutions you're touching once you're able to enable that.
So then now you're talking to municipalities?
Municipalities. You're also talking to hardware providers that are selling into solutions, whether it be parking or metering.
Right. Like parking's obvious, right? That parking's you don't obvious. Need humans to really execute on that anymore.
Right.
And you have services like Park Mobile, things like that, yeah. where they have a whole business around it where
exactly
that's an example of IoT.
It is. And the power of that being one, you can provide a better consumer experience through smart parking by allowing you to register for your parking space
and pay for it and repay for it without having to go out and add money to a meter.
Right. And then you can imagine a future where you're actually starting to influence traffic patterns as a result of some right. of that. So it's,
and tell me where the spot is. That'd be nice to know. Right.
Right. Yeah.
So now you're very bullish, I would imagine, on IoT.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You're all in, right?
I'm all in, believe me.
And then for Canopy, Canopy is a standalone, or how does that work if somebody wanted to learn more about Canopy?
Yeah, so if you need to know more about Canopy, you can go to banyanhills.com. And once you're on banyanhills.com, you'll get a full deep dive on the services that we provide around IoT, and then also our platform, Canopy. Canopy is all the literature on Canopy's there, use cases about how we've applied it to different markets, as well as how to contact us to integrate.
Now, what's the pain that the company's having where Canopy might be the right solution?
Anywhere that you're looking to leverage automation to drive down operational cost is the first place you should start.
Or if you have maybe disparate providers right now and you want to put them all under one roof?
All under one umbrella. That's a great example of leveraging the power of Canopy. One example of that would be, we're talking to a services-based company that provides, they actually do provide servicing for irrigation, pest control, HVAC. And so they are being approached by manufacturers of smart solutions like smart irrigation systems. And what they want to do is integrate all that smart technology up into Canopy so that they can be tied into their dispatch management system, and they literally have one place to go to see everything about their business.
Good stuff. Well, Steve Latham, thank you so much for sharing your story today. If somebody wanted to learn more, the website one more time for Banyan Hills.
www.banyanhills.com.
Good stuff. Hang with us. Got one more pair of guests.
You bet. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Next up on High Velocity Radio, got Allison Robinson, and she is the brains behind the Mom Project. Welcome.
Great to be here.
So tell us about the Mom Project.
So the Mom Project is a digital talent marketplace, and we connect moms who are with world-class employers who really respect diversity and inclusion.
So they have to respect diversity, or they can't play? Is that how that works?
Most of our customers do, as you can imagine.
So how'd you get into this?
So prior to founding Mom Project, I spent most of my career at P&G. Started there selling to large companies like Costco, Walmart, Target, learning how to sell to big enterprise. And then for my last 3 years at P&G, had the opportunity to lead the Pampers innovation team for North America.
So you got to meet a lot of moms?
Got to meet a lot of moms. I actually was not yet a mom myself, but I was so fascinated with the impact tech was having on consumer behavior. And then I had my son while on maternity leave from that role, and read that 43% of highly qualified women leave the workforce in the U.S.
They leave for a period of time.
Exactly.
What's the period of time they typically leave?
Typically anywhere between 2 and 10 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's a wide range, and it was, a challenge that I'd seen my mom, my sister undergo, and then seeing the national statistics to really back it up. I felt like a lot of people were debating the issues, but nobody was solving the issue on a national scale. So that's what I set out to do.
And then your solution is what?
So we work with typically Fortune 1000 companies that are looking to bring more gender diverse talent into their workforce. So we serve our customers in a variety of different ways, typically project-based work, sometimes traditional full-time employment, also through diversity initiatives such as Atlanta Women's Work Initiative, which is a stated objective to help women return to the workplace who have taken a gap. And then on the other side of our marketplace, where we connect moms. So we speak to them in a lot of different ways, typically through social media, a lot of word of mouth, to tell them about the Mom Project. And we find that the brand really resonates with women who are really striving to find this elusive work-life integration.
So now, are you like a temp agency for moms where you're helping find them work or projects?
So we're a talent marketplace. So some of our competitors would be more traditional staffing companies. We're seeing that the landscape is evolving quickly with technology. So most of the process happens through the marketplace. So women are creating profiles on our platform. They're telling us about their education, work history, and really what they're looking for in their ideal work opportunity. And we hone in on particularly flexibility preferences. In a city like Atlanta, commute can be a non-negotiable.
Right.
Or travel, schedule, ability to work remotely.
So that's what most people prefer?
So we actually find that the average mom in our network is looking for about a 27-hour work week.
27.
Very specific. Very specific, yeah. But a range, for everything from 10 to 50. And then on the other side of the marketplace, we're fortunate to work with great Fortune 1000 companies who are really supporting diversity. And this has kind of shifted really from a social impact issue to this is a business imperative. This is good for business. This affects consumer behavior and really see the ROI in hiring more women for their workforce.
Now, is it a missed opportunity for business because there's a lot of talented women that are available for some amount of time, but not, you know, an all or nothing kind of, I want a full-time job or a part-time job. They just want to have the flexible arrangement that suits them.
Yeah, it's been a huge pool of talent that's gotten overlooked. If you look at the female labor participation rate in the U.S., it actually peaked in the around 1990 and has stagnated since. And so many women drop out of the workforce, are incredibly educated, competent, and just need the right-sized opportunity. So we're excited to be able to bring those women to market in an efficient way.
Now, when you're talking to those women, are you finding them they were frustrated? Like, how come are they starting their own businesses or side hustle? Or are they doing something on the side? Or, like, what are they doing? Or are they just waiting?
There's definitely a fair amount who say, corporate America is not for me at this life stage. So we see women are actually the fastest-growing segment of entrepreneurs. If you look at the growing freelance economy, which is quickly becoming a large segment of our workforce, women are actually represent the highest percentage of full-time freelancers, most often citing caregiving as the reason why. And it's typically not because they don't want to work just as hard. It's that ability to tweak the day around major life events.
So that their priority is the flexible work schedule.
Yeah, exactly. It's even less kind of the hours worked. It's the ability to control the schedule, I would say, is something that we've heard time and time again.
So now when you're working with the large organizations, is that a difficult pill for them to swallow because they like to have, you know, regimen and rules and things like that? And it sounds like your worker wants to kind of...
Yeah, well, the good thing is we've got over 60,000 women in our network. And what we find that the needs are vastly different for all 60,000. So we segment it. So we look at, okay, here's the ones that are really looking for freelance project-based work. Here's ones that are looking for more traditional work structures. And here are the ones that are looking to get back to the workplace after taking a break. So we find that's a really great place to start working with large companies because they're ready to get back to kind of a more traditional corporate job. Perhaps their kids have gone back to school
and
they're ready for that routine again.
Right. Because at first they might say, look, I can only work Tuesdays and Thursdays from 10 till 2.
Exactly.
And then so do you have any opportunities that fit into that? And you might, right?
Exactly. So, you know, I came from Pampers, so it was hooked. The hook and hold. You hook mom at hospital and then you hold on to her throughout the duration. So for us, hook is at pregnancy. So how am I there for her as that career advocate? And then how do I stay with her throughout that career journey?
And then so when you got into this, so you left the big corporate job.
I did.
And then you took a shot at this entrepreneurial venture.
I did. Right. And now P&G is one of our best customers. Yeah. Yeah.
So now how were you able to do that transition?
You know, I cut my teeth in entrepreneurship. My family owned a small real estate business, and I always knew that was probably going to be my calling in life. I love P&G, cannot say enough good things about the company and the people there. But I knew that I ultimately wanted to kind of be able to lead a company of my own that I was personally super passionate about. So it's been a great transition. The work life balance is a little crazy these days. I've got two under the age of 3 while building a young company. So, but it's been a lot of fun and I'm so passionate about what we're building. So it makes it all worth it.
Now you mentioned the Atlanta Women's Work Initiative. Can you talk about how that came about?
Yeah. So we were seeing great pockets of success around helping these women reenter the workplace, which I mentioned. And so I saw an opportunity to kind of scale up the impact that we were having with those individual employers on a citywide level. So we launched a National Women's Work Initiative in its inaugural city, Atlanta. The Mom Project is very lucky to be part of the inaugural cohort of Engage companies, which gives us unique access to some of the best employers in town, including Invesco, Georgia Pacific, AT&T. And so we felt like Atlanta was a perfect place to launch this. So we've had the good fortune of working with these company leaders to make this a citywide initiative, and have gotten the mayor's support, who is herself a working mom. So it's really cool. It's been such a groundswell of women in Atlanta reaching out to me. They've so long been looking for this opportunity to rejoin the workplace, and to be able to do that in a scalable way is really gratifying.
So now, who'd you bring with you?
So I brought one of our partners from Invesco.
And this is Mark Rankin, and he is with Invesco. Welcome, Mark.
Well, thank you.
Now, why was it important for Invesco to get involved with the Mom Project?
Multiple reasons. One is that we do view diversity not just as the right thing to do, but it actually is a driver for us. So diversity of thought is key to our industry, and making sure that you have people around the table who are diverse and not only have a seat at the table, but a voice at a table is really important for us to be successful and differentiate ourselves from our competitors.
Well, talk about Invesco first. Let's go backward a little bit. How do you, like, what are you doing? What's your service to the public?
So Invesco is an asset management firm. If you have a 401k or you are invested in mutual funds, you hopefully have one of our funds. And my role within that is the head of HR Centers of Excellence, which is our functional areas of HR, talent acquisition being one of those functions.
Now, how did you become aware of the Mom Project?
We had connected with them through the Engage venture and through an investment within smaller companies such as the Mom Project that are not necessarily startup, but early in their career. And we worked with them on a number of projects around temporary labor as well as full-time staffing. And then when the Atlanta Work Women's Work Initiative started up, we were really excited to try to do the returnship. And so we've pledged to do 5 returnships at Invesco. We've staffed 3 of them so far. We have 1 kind of in process and 1 that we're still working on.
So a returnship, is that related to an internship? Are they,
so
this is a new term? Did you invent this, a Mom Project word?
So I think Goldman Sachs actually trademarked it.
Trademarked, yeah. Wow.
Yeah, so think of a professional who's already had great experience re-entering.
Right.
Yeah.
So now, so Invesco started a returnship program?
We did. Our goal in this returnship program is that these are actually full-time employees, permanent employees right from the start that have a 6-month returnship component to it. But we want the people who are returning to feel that they're part of Invesco from day one, so they have full benefits, fully integrated into their teams, and then at the end of the 6 months, they are just as a normal employee. We think there's a lot of opportunity. We are doing the same thing that every other company is struggling with, which is trying to find the best talent at every possible way we can, and this is one of those areas that it's an untapped market, and we think we can take advantage of that.
So now, a returnship is it a project or is it a trial run? Like what's really happening there?
Yeah. So it really depends. So at Invesco, they're kind of coming in on a full-time permanent value prop. And then for some it's project and with a potential to convert to perm. So it works differently depending on the company's hiring needs.
So now this is a returnship. Does the Mom Project work with internships as well, or those are...
No, that could be a new market for us.
That's different.
That's different.
And then you don't do that.
No, we're not.
Do moms want that, or they don't want that, to try a new thing?
You know, it's interesting. I think we think about reskilling a lot. We've talked with a couple of customers. You have an incredibly talented woman who maybe has math, STEM background. The opportunity to train someone who's been out a couple of years on the most recent software language. We think there's definitely upskilling, pivoting opportunities for sure.
Right, because I would imagine that, especially if a mom is out of the workforce for 10 years, I mean, they missed, you know, Facebook, right? Like, they could have been a PR person, and now this is a whole new PR climate.
Yeah, it certainly depends on the profession. I would say for the most part, they integrate from a skills perspective really well. It tends to be more of kind of the cultural, just getting reacclimated to the workplace.
Into the rhythm of the work.
The confidence is what I see typically as the biggest barrier holding women back.
So Mark, for you, the people that have gone through this, through the Mom Project, how has that been?
So we just hired our first set of 3 individuals on Monday.
Okay, so it's brand new.
So it's brand new.
What about the launch? Were they able to do that in a pretty seamless manner or help you get that going?
Yeah, they were. It's been very helpful with us, kind of working with us to figure out what are our needs and making sure that they can bring us the quality people that we're looking for to fill those needs. And so far we've been very happy with that. It's been very impressed with the Invesco managers who have been very engaged in it and wanting to participate. And I do credit the Mom Project a lot for really being flexible in terms of their ability to say, what is it that you need? For example, in some of these roles, we did need full-time staff that mm-hmm. they had to be there, for a full-time role. And they were able to work with us to say, oh, yes, we can find that. And we were looking for very specific skill sets of analysts, and they were able to help us find that as well. So that wealth of database has really been helpful.
So then you were able to take your database, Allison, and then just go through it and say, who fits this?
Exactly. Yeah. So the value we add is we align the needs of the employer with the needs of the women, realizing that both are going to be really different.
And then you are the matchmaker.
Exactly. Yep.
And then you're taking the burden off the Invesco folks so they don't have to spend their time going down and vetting the person.
Well, they're doing the sourcing for us.
Right.
And then we're doing the interviewing, obviously, to make sure that we have a good fit from both the technical skills as well as the competencies and are fitting our purpose to help.
But you're doing some interviewing to make sure that the person you're giving them to interview is pretty close.
Yeah. So we've actually have a PhD on staff who's a social and data scientist. So she leads a lot of our match intelligence work. Mm-hmm. So we've gotten a 70% reliability in terms of who we think could be a great fit for an opportunity and those that ultimately either make it to the interviewing or hire stage, which are what we consider success measures.
So now, Mark, from your standpoint, did this happen in a faster way than you could have done it yourself or through a different service?
Absolutely. We could have tried to go out and source ourselves and try to build the network. But with the ready-made network that Allison's company provides, it makes it a lot easier for us to be able to just focus on the interviewing stage and focus on making sure that we know what we want to get out of these positions.
So now, how do you see you guys working together as this goes forward?
Well, like I said, we've pledged for 5 right now. I'm hoping that is the beginning. We are always looking for top quality talent. And if these 5 work as well as we expect them to, then we'll be hopefully coming back for more.
So now what period of time would you know that this is working as you intend?
So we have the returnship for the first 6 months, but the goal is, we probably look at that at the 6 months and then look at it again at 6 months later to say, are they, is everyone sort of working the way we want them to work? And are we getting the results that we're looking for?
And then, the results would be, that means that Allison did a good job of choosing the right people.
Absolutely. I mean, we look at Allison in a way the same way we would look at a recruitment agency is, are they bringing us talented people that not just show up well in interviews, but a year, 2 year, 3 year, right, 4 year, 5 years on are some of our leading employees to, run the firm.
So now, from the diversity standpoint, was this a good, like you would refer this out to other of your colleagues in other departments, or is that something that?
So my role in HR is to work with the business departments to identify what their needs are. And this was something that we looked at certain roles and said, we think this might be a good fit. Worked with managers to understand what their needs were, and then worked with Allison and her team to be able to say, I think we can create a match for this. And then was able to move forward.
Right. But so this, you needed specific analysts, this type of person.
We have a lot of different needs. The analyst role was one thing that we thought would be a good match. As Allison talked about, women coming back into the workforce, the key core competencies of someone who's in that type of role, while the technology changes, the ideas and mindset do not change as much. And so it seemed to be a good fit for that part of the role.
And Allison, your database includes people in all kinds of areas, not just financial analysts.
Yeah,
right.
Business and tech is really the focus for us right now. So we think about what are the core functions within a large enterprise. So typically we see a lot of financial roles, marketing, HR, operations, and technology.
And then where is Mom Project based?
We're based in Chicago.
So you're based in Chicago and you came here for this Atlanta Women's Work Initiative is what got you to Atlanta?
Yeah, well, I'm part of the Engage investment cohort, which mm-hmm. is how I first started spending a lot of time here, but I'm here probably about once a month. Love Atlanta.
And then that's how you recruited these Atlanta firms to get involved?
Yeah. So Invesco, Georgia Pacific, these are partners of Engage. Mm-hmm. So they not only have a financial stake with the MOM project, but also support us in other ways, which has been...
So now are you working with other cities' women's work initiatives?
Yeah, so we're really excited. So this has been the testing ground, and we're excited to really scale the program across other major markets. So we're looking at New York, Chicago, and San Francisco right now.
And so this is a beta for this for you?
Exactly. Yeah, women from all pockets of the country have been reaching out, come to Boston, come to Austin. It's been really cool.
Now, the matches you're making are typically with larger corporate firms.
Yeah. Large enterprise represents the bulk of the hiring just because they're doing a lot more velocity of hiring. We also work with small companies, some here in Atlanta. We have a great value prop for them because maybe they need an HR person or a CFO, but they don't need them 40 hours a week.
Oh, so like a temporary CFO or CMO.
Exactly, maybe 20 hours a week. They can crank through the work. So we do work with smaller companies as well.
And then do you work with VCs and private equity firms?
Not so much. They obviously have a lot of assets under management, but their team sizes tend to be pretty small.
So I didn't know if you did that flex executive in order to help them in their startups to help them.
You know, I've got investors myself. I can pitch it to them. I think there's probably some ways we could support their business for sure.
And then your business comes from all over the country.
Actually, I take that back. So our investor, Engage, hired an incredible marketer and event planner through MOM Project.
Yeah. There you go.
There you go.
So now you're looking to expand all over the country?
Yeah. So Chicago, Atlanta, and San Francisco are really the focus for us in 2018. Mm-hmm.
And then are you going to have boots on the ground here or
yes.
You're just going to travel around?
I'm so excited. Mm-hmm. So we have our first person in Atlanta, Rebecca, who's actually here today in the studio. Mm-hmm. So she'll be leading the charge here.
And then her role is going to be to partner with other Fortune 1000 companies.
Yeah. So she'll continue to strengthen the relationships we have with our customers here and then help cultivate new relationships as well.
With the moms or is that a different group handles the mom community?
Because that's mostly done digitally. We centralize that at our headquarters in Chicago for the most part.
And that's all virtual. That's a virtual social network.
Yeah, in terms of how we advertise to mom, but certainly we have partnerships. I was just with Georgia Tech yesterday. So more kind of surgical strategic relationships to make sure that there's broad awareness at mm-hmm. the market level.
And then if there's a mom out there that wants to get involved, what's the best way for a mom to connect with you guys?
Sign up to themomproject.com. You'll see on our homepage a call to action to AWWI, which will specifically link you to the Atlanta-based return to work opportunities.
And then if you're a company that's looking to diversify their workforce or engage with a mom through the Mom Project, what's the best way for them to find you?
Come to our site, momproject.com.
Good stuff. Well, Allison, thank you so much for sharing your story. And Mark, appreciate you coming here to support them.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Katie Galley. We will see you all next time on High Velocity Radio.